Stonewall Barger or Barger, depending who you ask, from Halifax. So I invite you to come on October 28th and hear Randy Meggs read his hockey poems and figure out why John and his parents pronounce their last name differently from each other. So we're going to have readings tonight back-to-back, as always, by David and Karen. And then afterwards, if you have any questions or comments or anecdotes, we can take a few minutes for discussions if you're not too thirsty after the reading. So David C. Moore's first book of poetry, Inter Alia, which is on the table back there, last four books of the first printing, so get those autographed, was published by Brick Books. It was shortlisted for the Gerald Lampert Award for Best First Book. His poetry reviews and essays have also appeared almost everywhere, in The Fiddlehead, The Malahat, Arc, Prism, Precipice, and Ellipse, among others. And his work was also currently selected just this past year, I guess, for the Best Canadian Poetry Anthology. David lives in Toronto, where he works in the film industry. I'm not sure if his poems contain the film industry, but maybe you'll get some good gossip out of some of them. Please help me welcome David Seymour.
Thanks very much, Katya. I don't know if I have any good film gossip, but slowly but surely, some of the material is making its way into my poetry. So, I am actually going to read all new material tonight. So if you want to find out what's in the book, you're going to have to buy it. Most of this is part of, if not all of it actually, is part of a third manuscript that I'm working on right now. And it's arisen essentially, if you want to kind of thread an idea through the poems, about trying to address the issue of identity and what that means, what does identity constitute in terms of our perceptions and our experiences, which are often dubious at best, how the consciousness, our consciousness kind of processes these, and how fragile a concept consciousness is itself. It's particularly when you try to define it in terms of permanence through time. I'll just begin. This first one is called Vertebrate. Something undulate was slain somehow, stumbled in the tangled brome and popped a knee. Tried climbing higher ground to lick an entry wound too late, run down by early hominids, who'd come trampling through the kill site, threatened, ill-fed. Or untagged, unowned, picked off by joyless locals from the road and left for dead. Carcass gone, a pulse of nutrient for the soil, lying long enough for bones to string a necklace in the overgrowth, their own cairn, until we humped up the unfarmed ridge and they detonated underfoot. What with my spurned hips and joints, there's no justifying stooping low, near to fours, to investigate and learn, unclasp one pearl. Size a fist, heft a hand grenade. Now it haunches, specimen on the desk, like a plaster counterfeit beside the Zippo, a few ballpoints, and doesn't do a thing while I adjust the lumbar cant of my office chair. There, that's fine as far as I'm concerned. And speaking in terms of identity and its malleability or plasticity, I wrote this as a kind of private wish, as perhaps you can sympathize with, of having more than one of yourself to deal with the rest of the world. It's called Clone. Four would be enough of me for me. No, three. They might not easily apprehend, but they can do. And doing's the battle I get them to attend. To send them out with grocery lists and the day-to-days, milk, bread, whatever I yen for between bread, they'll even plate it carefully so I can keep on teasing out this stuff. Parties, several at once, they drink like cops filling late-month quotas, engage the feckless literati with the Phaedrus while I seduce their wives. That means course enrollment, tuition, tough. I learned to play guitar unburdened during their job interviews, finally fangle origami. It's a bit like being God, seeing myself from behind, askance in the way you can't but want to. The sum of our actions define me, while they live my life as though committing crimes. Lately, we don't look each other in the eye. They're not reading dictionaries in the off hours, unfashionably late, on the skive at the local, making fools of me, unemployable. Soon, and earlier than they think, with such retrograde expectancy, they'll drown in the last air left them. So it's a waiting game. Time for a fresh start. Tonight, I'll hit the town and rake the coals they've left. I'm going to wear my favorite shirt, the brown one. Or am I? This next is called Odd. And I'm not much to say about it. I'll let it speak for itself. Odd. Then unbuoyant dread at the all-night hot dog stand. On the woozy cab ride home, the street turns trampoline. Olympic updates play on ethnic radio. Cars lurch to the stops like relics, waiting for an archivist with foresight. Sewer smells, primary, combine then cancel out. Faces of the passers-by all broadly range the zone of cranky and dissatisfied. What happens badly comes in threes, but never does triangulate, while they waver, gather patternless at crosswalks, not as sums of chance, but slim chances held against. Probably, we're told, it's not success or doing our job well that counts, only to recuperate from unexpected failures. The business district's scrapers look like saints about to levitate. Every ad's in love with us. Condo cranes are angels poised again to strike. This next one is fairly new off the press, as it were. One note, Cnidaria is the class of jellyfish and hydra and sea anemones that exist in the oceans. So Cnidaria is a word that you'll encounter. The whole thing is, it's something, if you know of him, it's something of my attempt to write a Dean Young poem. And I don't know if you've ever had one of those writers that confounds you and frustrates you, and yet you still derive so much pleasure from them, and you don't know why, and you don't know how it is. They're doing what they're doing. And Dean Young's one of those guys for me. He manages this incredibly deep and strong association on what appears on the surface as very mild connections. So this is my attempt at that. It's called When. From here, the outdoors look like a dream sequence, distorted as through stressed aquarium perspex rather than glass. When I was young, I'd hang my head upside down over the arm of the sofa so that the furniture gripped the ceiling shag. Historical blood rushed to the inverted heads in family portraits. I marveled at the unlofty spaciousness we'd have in which to live. But doorways were difficult to negotiate. A raven large as a lion lands, its talons hectoring bare branches with what must be a sound like kitchen clatter, dropped plastic cutlery, were I close enough to almost catch them. You know, was outside, not inside, and minuscule. This reminds me of another lovely tableau. In windy signatures along that rural route, the final scrawl of poplar shadows at dusk. Memory can be sketchy, so embellishing atmospheric detail is essential. The task has always been to keep the brain alive in time. A calcium-binding protein found in Cnidaria might prevent decline. Consider cinematic explosions of the enhanced cosmic variety for a visual analogy. When you think I'm inattentive, or when I step cartoonishly high across thresholds, it's because I haven't fully recovered from childhood. A Portuguese man of war is a conglomerate of non-sentient jellies rather than a discrete creature, as it appears to be, as we appear to be, for the most part. In person, though, I am inevitably myself and can thread moments together even when they happen as if they've never happened at all. This next is was an attempt to write a poem without metaphors, which failed miserably. This is the result. It's called Eyewitness Testimony. The man who was killed died. The gun had gone ballistic in the parking lot. Up to then, all he'd done was have nothing to lose. His hair was growing right out of his face. Earlier, from the precipitate sky, hail the size of golf balls pelted the clubhouse. Hail-sized golf balls in errant trajectory pelted the clubhouse before the golfers ran for cover from the weather. This occurred on the fringe of suburbs and their evident neighboring. The cars remained parked in the lot where he fell, immobile, necessary machinery. The woman at the scene, sporting leopard print spandex, was way too realistic. She lacked conspicuous panty lines. Her description, though relevant, was weapon-focused. The report from the shots fired was heard variably as a calendar sliding off a kitchen wall and the after vacuum of implosion. With decibel fluctuation, distance, and Doppler effect, reports varied. Between the houses backing onto the 10th green, the aphids gathered all sounds within the 250 to 45,000 cycle range of their tympana and slept uninterviewed in the shade of hydrangea. The passing cab driver had the largest hippocampus among the onlookers, being the least lost. This was scientifically proven, though need not be mentioned in the final. Others were directionless. What they saw, they now knew, had never not happened. Wondering how they had arrived here, how here arrives. Post-storm light struck the police cruiser windshield, behaving as particles or waves, depending. Even as testimonials hardened into notebook fact. Minor variations in accounts of the story are inherent. Plausible rival hypotheses will arise in court. The incident began more suddenly than the victim expected and will last much longer. This next is, just gonna check my time here. This next is called The Photo Double, and it was a job that I had a long time ago now in another life. I've only now begun to start writing about my experiences in film, so they're coming slowly but surely after many years of percolation. But this is The Photo Double. On the gimbaled replica of the tall ship, the director's face is lost behind a megaphone. The cameras, correctly aligned, produce a seamless waterline between the shooting tank and the Pacific Ocean behind it. Cloudy skies are ideal for this illusion. Study the dailies, learn his moves. I am the mirror left after the actor has used the mirrors up, the wide-angle lens. The scene requires the release of several thousand gallons of siphoned seawater. Decommissioned jet engines fill the sails on action. It will run 15 on-screen seconds. There's a delicacy born of dangerous moments the producers are desperate to capture. View playback. The lead's on-deck comportment is casual, loaded with unrelinquished energies, cocked in slumped shoulders and languid gorilla-like arms. Tenderness confines its gestures to near misses. The use of violence must always appear a life-saving measure. Last looks, final touches. An air horn blows, the extras are miming. As the rubber saber strikes my arm, I'll react like it's cleaved to bone, which has less to do with feeling pain than understanding timing. Apply glycerin tear. In the background, all the British sailors are Americans. all the French are Mexicans. Este muy contento de estar. Return to the dailies. Now, when I'm alone, I often act as though someone else were watching. Each take costs 50 grand, and the extras continue to disappear every time they leave the picture frame. Cut, cut, camera reload. They are about to roll again. Pretend. Be unreal. Be more real than I've ever imagined. And I'll end with the sunny climes of Florida in this on this rainy night. Karen and I had the peculiar pleasure of spending a Christmas for a week in Florida, in the southern end of Florida, which neither of us had ever been to or experienced. And so it was just it was strange and interesting to say the least. So I'll let the poem lend the details to the place. So this is called FLA. Where want has ended, communities are gated. The sprawl broken by box store malls, all of it floating 7 feet above sea level. Spotless streets corsaged with palms, the mostly vacant homes house screened in pools off the back instead of yards. Safe, not safe, but having purchased a sense of security. We imagine nothing but what surrounds us here. Ensconced, we steam in the hot tub like sausages in our natural casings. A bald eagle steals an osprey's prey mid-flight. Snowy egrets dodge past barefoot waders toward the seltzered surf like waiters without arms or trays. The sun snaps 1 second into the next, puzzle piece perfect and clean as the ice in our margaritas. A certain order finds its way. If we see dolphins today, the fit will feel even closer. Jimmy Buffett calms the nerves of the German woman buying swim trunks for her nervous son. Masticating is chewing, expectorating is spitting and a crime. I don't know why these mannerisms come to mind, while nature extends such courtesies to us in its decline. The outlet is a well-turned-out buffet. Nictitating also feels important to the moment, the vast air-conditioned aisles quietly filling with it. Among the manatees and alligators tangling in the Everglades, beyond the walls of this enclosure, something terrible is happening, the likes of which we'd rather not see, sounds we'd rather not hear. The ranger reloads his camera, unaccustomed to this dilemma. Nightly self-policed, each encoded house a curfew of sleeping couples, transparent to one another as they can let themselves be, truthful as strangers asking for directions. Loss, regret, distress, all the anonymous murdered selves relax on their nocturnal faces. Tomorrow's forecast, like every other, is what they are going to expect. The humidity is primitive, a florid stink of ripe vegetable and camouflaged layers. Memory is dampened to mere whiff, then masked by chlorinated pools, barbecues, bourbon, the new time of children. We remember nothing but what surrounds us here. On the white sand beach, stark cherubs and tanned bathers step haltingly into the gulf, as if afraid the returning somewhere happily forgotten. I wish I could describe it to you with the big, wholesome metaphor of music. These healthy, buoyant tourists, how the decorated yuccas and pastel condominiums simply drain away when the ocean's brilliant flag swells in the outcast eye. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Hello? Oh, it's for you. So thanks, David, or is it really David? Is it a clone? Up next is Karen Zoli, who I hope will turn out to be the cure for the common cold. Her first collection of poems, Short Hall Engine, won the BC Book Prize, the Dorothy Livesay Award, and was shortlisted for the Gerald Lampert, the Relit Prize, and the Griffin. Her second, Modern Normal, was shortlisted for the Trillium Poetry Prize and named to the Globe and Mail's list of the best books of 2005. And her most recent book, Pigeon, which just came out this past year, was also on the Globe and Mail list for 2009 and won the Griffin Poetry Prize this past June. She now teaches for the University of British Columbia's optional residency MFA, lives in Toronto, and has come down the 401 to share with her poetry with us tonight. Please help me welcome Karen Zoli.
Thanks, Katya. I don't know about the cure for the common cold. I just hope, you know, one always hopes one isn't the cause of the common cold. I'm going to read some poems from Pigeon, and I also may inflict a couple of new ones on you as well. But I'm going to start with a poem called Wager, one of the poems that has been generated from living in Toronto, which we've been doing for a few years now. And I used to do a lot of driving by myself and enjoyed it. And we don't have a car now, so sometimes I think about, you know, those times being on the road and all of that. And of course, with distance, everything becomes very nostalgic, and you forget all the times, you know, you're at some crap motel and you can't get the radiator cap off of the old truck that you're driving and all that kind of stuff. One of the things that I was fond of along the highways was what I think of kind of a North American fondness for putting for the world's largest things beside the road, and they make an appearance in this poem. This is Wager. Off-season brings rain and new life to old habits. Whatever it is that we're doing, we can't help wanting to. Roadside attractions of the great Southwest are nothing without us. The world's largest animals, vegetables, minerals fade and fall over as junk beside our beloved minor highways. And the Four Aces in Kingman, Arizona, having suffered the attentions of the Board of Health, has closed its doors for good. I'm telling you, if you believe it's worse never to have tried, then you haven't really tried. Though the evidence confirms a deeply unimaginative lack of decent judgment, it's possible, in the echoey solitude that is resolve's aftermath, to venture out into the hour of diminishing contrast, under cautionary perfumes of the chocolate bar factory, with the intent to do no harm. The honorable life is like timing. One might not have the talent for it. Take this guy up ahead who's driven 45 minutes with his turn signal on through this jurisdiction of few exits, as if the hope of a left is all he's got now in his one chance on this earth. I'm going to read a poem now called Tractor, and I grew up on a farm in southwest Saskatchewan where my parents still farm, and they bought a new tractor a few years ago, and it is so big that they needed to build a new building to put it in. In the second stanza of the poem references a process called fracking, which is going on a lot out where I'm from, and it is when natural gas companies break up the rock and the earth below the surface so they can, you know, break things up so they can stick the pipe in to where the gas reservoirs are. And it's a process you don't want to be anywhere near. And it's sort of, I mean, the tractor is, is kind of a conflicted thing for me because it's, you know, it burns a lot of fuel and it roars around, and in some ways is sort of represents some of the, like, the, well, one of the several, you know, harmful things about conventional farming practice. But it's also really an amazing, amazing example of human ingenuity, and really fun to drive. So this is Tractor. More than a story high, and twice that long, it looks igneous, the Bueller Versatile 2360. Possessed of the ecology of some hellacious minor island on which options are now standard. Cresting the sections in a corona, part dirt, part heat, it appears risen full-blown from our deeper needs, aspirating its turbo-cooled air, articulated and fully compatible. What used to take a week, it does in a day on approximately a half mile to the gallon. It costs $150,000. We hope to own it outright by 2017. Few things wrought by human hands are more sublime than the Bueller Versatile 2360. Across the road, a crew erects the floodlit derricks of a Texan outfit whose presumptions are consistently vindicated. The ancient seabed will be fractured to 1,000 feet by pressuring through a pipe literal tons of a fluid, the constituents of which are best left out of this, to tap the sweet gas where it lies like the side our bread is buttered on. The earth shakes terribly then, dear Houston, dear parent corporation, with its rebroken dead and freshly killed, the air concussive, cardiac, irregular. It silences the arguments of every living thing, and our minds in that time are not entirely elsewhere. But I was speaking of the Bueller Versatile 2360, Phase D, and how well recognized it is among the classics. Wagner, Steiger, International Harvester, John Deere, Case, Minneapolis Moline, Oliver, White, Alice Chalmers, Massey Ferguson, Ford, Wright, Rome. One could say it manifests fate, forged like a pearl around the grit of centuries. That, in a sense, it's always been with us. The diesel smell of a foregone conclusion. In times of doubt, we cast our eyes upon the Bueller Versatile 2360 and are comforted. And when it breaks down, or thinks itself in gear and won't, for our own good, start, it takes a guy out from the city at $60 an hour, plus travel and parts, to fix it. We are on our way to New Brunswick, David and Katya and I, for the poetry weekend tomorrow. And so I'm going to read a poem called In New Brunswick, which I wrote when we were in New Brunswick. A couple of years ago, I was a writer in residence out there. And God, you know, something about being a prairie person, and I've never seen more trees in my life. And it's kind of, you know, when you're used to seeing everything out there, it's like, you know, Lord only knows what's, you know, you can get snuck up on so easy with all these trees. But that's me. In New Brunswick. Daylight fails crucially along the St. John River, and a focal point of damp sand dims. Suddenly, like a junked mattress, a tire, in the flashlight of the immediate future, one is come upon. The forest, with its long hallways and concealing furnitures, is not for me. 100 yards from the highway is primeval in its ferns and muck and drowned hardwoods below the floodline. Cellular turnover is practically audible. I'm in the middle of my life. I see it as through a crowd, from a bad angle, and the show continues. My industry fails me. The first person fails me utterly, again and again, like a landlord. Even the flakeboard plant, rusting vividly in coastal fog, is more than the sum of its glues and dodgy management. On the far shore, trees in inestimable numbers, gray as one toward evening, sleep standing like horses in thin smoke of the fires up at Minto. Let's see. I'm going to read one called Cave Bear. It came out of a time, some time spent in Banff. And there's a reference in here to the Hillcrest mine disaster. Cave Bear. The longer dead, the more expensive. Extinction adds value. Value appreciates. This may demonstrate a complex cultural mechanism, but in any case, buyers get interested. And nothing's worth anything without the buyers. No one knows that better than the United Mine Workers of America. A hired team cataloged the skeleton, took it from its cave to put on the open market. Retail bought it, flew it over to reassemble and sell again. Imagine him foraging low Croatian mountains in the Pleistocene, and now he's flying. Now propped at an aggressive posture in the foyer of a tourist shop in the Canadian Rockies and going for roughly 40. The pit extends its undivided attention. When the gas ignited off the slant at Hillcrest Old Level 1, 93 years ago, June, they were carried out by the hundreds, alive or dead. The Bratismen, carpenters, timbermen, rope riders, hoistmen, laborers, miners. All but me, Sidney Bainbridge, the one man never found. I'm just going to read a couple of new ones now. This one is called All That Is Certain Is Night Lasts Longer Than the Day. Look at your past, how it's grown. You've known it since it was yay high. Still, you, as you stand now, have never been there. Parts worn out, renewed, replaced. Though you may bear the same name. You're like the joke about the axe. In time, you've learned that to behave badly isn't necessarily to behave out of character. To thine own self be true. In script, above the nation's chalkboards, the nation's talk shows. And not a great idea, depending. It's too much for you, I know. One day your life will be like a lake in the high country no one will ever see. And it will also be the animals of that place. Its figures indistinguishable from ground. All of time will flow into it. Leave the child you were alone. The wish to comfort her is a desire to be comforted. Would you have her recognize herself buried alive in the memories of a stranger? Avoideth the back roads, double wides of friends and friends of friends. Some of what you would warn against has not yet entered her vernacular. She travels unerringly toward you, as if you are the north. Between you, a valley has opened. In this valley, a river. On this river, an obscuring mist. A mist not unlike it walks the morning streets, comments on the distinction of Ottawa from Hull, Buda from Pest, what used to be estuary from what used to be Empress, and the ferry that once ran between them. And the last one I'll read is called Red. And it came out of watching a lot of television news. Gratitude toward the houseplants, shame for what they must endure. Of particular concern, the azalea, flowering like the gestures and cries of someone off the trail who sees a helicopter. And a long, cold night is coming on. Is it dying or being killed? When I'm 100% on what's happening, there's still that niggling 5. Too much water, neglect, information, decisions made at the executive level. Science tells us plants emit signatures and responses on yet another frequency we cannot hear. That's all we need. When we were little, we were told our heads were in the clouds. Now, we suspect it is the opposite. Thanks very much.
That's a great last line. Does anyone have any questions or about tractors, about the fixity of consciousness, about New Brunswick versus open fields? I'll stare at you like a classroom for like 3 seconds, giving you time to digest. Otherwise, please join me in thanking the Canada Council, the Atwater Library. I'll see you on October 28th, and please, once again, a big round of applause for David and Tom.